For November the 2nd, 2018, we talk about the PlayStation Classic lineup reveal, Super Mario Party, and we ask you about the dumbest ways you've died in video games. Welcome to Level 262. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We are back after a week away. I was at the Portland Retro Games Expo. I saw a lot of you, and you were all very pleasant. Thank you. It was a good time. Also, while I was away, I got sick. Which is, you know, I don't want to lead with that as the, like, oh, hey, everybody, like, dote over me and say, whoa, is Cole rending of garments and things like that. Remember the last episode where Ben had allergies and I caught his allergies over the line? Yeah. This is
sorry about that.
This is like that.
I sneezed too hard in the microphone.
Yeah, this is like that.
What we're saying is we're blaming this on Ben.
Yeah, maybe. No, I'm blaming it on the one person who shook my hand who didn't wash his hand beforehand. You know who you are. I don't know. Convention crud. It happens. No, so this is like the allergies, except I have bronchitis and an ear infection. I will do my best to edit the coughing out. Some of them might stay in. Just going to leave that up there for everybody, just as a mea culpa. Otherwise, though, I don't have to...
like an Easter egg.
Yeah.
Try and listen for the quiet coughs.
Yeah. Maybe there's a code in them.
Speed it up to 300 times, edit out everything except for the coughs.
Uh-huh.
And then find something valuable to do with your life.
Yeah. So, I mean, other than PRG, there hasn't been an awful lot going on. There's been a lot of me laying in bed with a heating pad against my ear. But you know, I know a thing I did. I went and voted this morning.
Nice. Woo-hoo.
Yeah. Went over to the courthouse. It was super fast, super nice. I would recommend people do that too.
Yeah. This is our last chance to say to vote. So vote.
Yep.
Vote.
Yeah. So it may be your last chance to vote in general.
Who knows? We're just, all we can do is take action right now. That's all that we have. There is no future. The past, forget about it. Go out there and exercise your right. If you're in America, wherever you're at, if you're able to vote there, please do as well. But yes, go do it early. Take friends, etc. All that. I know I've already told you to go vote, but I did it today, and I wanted to highlight that now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So did Dennis? Usually, I go to the person who's been away the longest. But I had that disclaimer. Dennis, how are you?
Yeah, I've been away so long that it's wrapped around, and I think I'm the newest again or something like that.
Yeah, our brand new host, Dennis Furia.
it's good to be back after a long hiatus induced by travel and all kinds of craziness.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fruitful travel. So I'm fortunate to be on a business or working for a business that's growing very fast, which is mm-hmm. great.
Nice.
It just means time is at more of a premium than ever.
Right.
We've successfully also gotten more involved in some neighborhood things. So there have been Halloween parties aplenty.
Ooh,
over nice. the weekend that just finished and coming up. But all those things combined, like I said, make time at a premium.
What is Luke dressing up as?
Oh, this is good. I don't know if I've told you guys this yet. So Luke and Milo are just going as their super selves. So okay. They've got capes and masks and just a big letter L and a big letter M on their chests. And then Jen and I are going as their evil arch nemesis, bedtime and chores.
So bedtime, so, I think I can picture that in my head. How do mm-hmm. you evoke chores?
So a bandolier of scrubby pads.
Okay.
My helmet is made out of a laundry basket, like a smaller circular laundry basket.
Right.
I carry a broom and a squirt bottle, but it's an empty squirt bottle, but like, you know, what you would normally have bleach or whatever in. And then what's the fun? Oh, I have the big like rubber dishwashing gloves on my hands.
Nice.
Yeah. And just clean your room, chase them around and they fight back. And it's been fun.
That is very good.
That's good times. The other thing, I think I mentioned this on the show when it was starting, we hosted a family from Nepal that had immigrated here. And just this last week, they were able to move out to their own apartment.
Fantastic.
Yes. So this is the end of an era. I can finally comfortably walk around in underwear in my house again, which is a small comfort that I didn't know I missed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now only the cats can judge you.
And who cares what they think?
Oh, man. No one can judge you harder than a cat can.
Oh, yeah.
Just through a gaze, you know. It's like their evolutionary trait is they've evolved the ability to judge you harder than anyone else in the universe.
But
you know, we talked about doing what you can right now, and it's been pretty cool to watch and be a part of kind of getting someone established here who kind of falls in that category that's getting targeted pretty hard right now. So, you know, any small way voting is great. If you can find someone in your local community that falls into any of the communities that are targeted or that are kind of less privileged, that getting involved personally is useful and heavily rewarding as well.
Yeah. Says someone who's done it.
Yeah. I feel like I can plug that now.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, it's great to have you back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah. So I also went out of town while we were gone. I went to Seattle to visit some old coworkers and some friends from college. And I also met, relating to cat stories, I met a Russian blue cat there. So
I love those things.
I thought of you. And
I thought
of this being your future cat.
How was he? Or she?
He was pretty cool. He was a little bit sassy, but you know.
No, you didn't.
Kind of how cats
are. That specific one, did you steal it?
No. I have not seen a service cat on an airplane yet, but one day.
How is that even a thing?
Service cat?
Service cat?
Yeah, like what service can a cat provide other than mousing?
There are like emotional support animals, like that's a thing.
People are being more liberal with
the cat has ever served a human.
They
people are being
be
more
served.
Liberal with their companion dogs, so I figure it's a matter of time before it jumps species.
Yeah. Good.
One of my coworkers was on that flight that had the crazy lady that wouldn't let the squirrel off the plane.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
those things you see in the news, they happen.
That's a funny story to read in a headline. I'm positive that was terrifying.
Yes.
Wait, what happened?
Some old lady tried to bring an emotional support squirrel online unsanctioned or on the plane unsanctioned, and then refused to leave and staged a screaming match when they insisted that she not have a squirrel on the plane.
Yeah.
Just in general, when a service animal is actually a service animal that's trained at school, but it really frustrates me the people that just like claim a random animal that doesn't have proper training is a service animal.
Yeah, and then it's it becomes a like, okay, so are you going to be the person who calls me out? Like, who you don't know what I struggle with or what this animal's like.
Yeah, basically, Airlines just need to charge for having pets, but make it like convenient for bringing pets on planes because people obviously want to do it.
Yep, there's demands to take it out of the gray market. But
the gray squirrel market.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I absolutely would not allow a squirrel onto onto a plane just because I've seen what they've done to my bird feeders.
I was thinking I've seen what they did on Looney Tunes.
I guess what I'm saying is if they're determined enough, they will get into that cockpit. If a flight attendant takes a bag of peanuts up there to the pilot saying, hey, I know you like your snack, and the squirrel gets wind of it, guess what?
And every movie I've ever watched tells me that it will get up the pilot's pant leg.
Yes. I mean, it's the straightest route to the nuts. that wasn't even clever. Stop laughing. Oh, and David, how are you?
I'm living the dream, I guess.
Cool.
I don't know. I'm not a huge fan. It's finally striking home that I moved back to a place that has winter.
Yeah.
And I'm not super thrilled about this.
after spending many, many winters away. Welcome back. Welcome back to temperate climes.
I've had to break down and turn on the heater and stuff like that, and Actually, probably the most awkward thing is I don't really have much in the way of jackets until I go home for Thanksgiving, because I basically left them all in storage at my parents' house when I moved to San Francisco.
I'm just whistling past the graveyard. Why would I need one of these?
Knows it is impossible to find a store in New York. They're stuck.
There are none of them.
See, you would actually be surprised. Like in I guess I should say in Manhattan, at least, a store I can afford for clothing is fairly difficult.
Right. Oh,
I didn't say anything about affordable. Yeah, God no.
Oh yeah, man, ridiculous. No,
I mean, yeah, I can go to, you know, Scott, was it Scott or whatever, and get like $700 leather jacket. But
right.
What you need to do is go to Scott, who's the guy on the corner selling coats out of his coat.
Yeah. But I mean, like all of our Midwestern cornbread asses, like, we think, okay, you need a coat. Well, I will go to Target, or I will go to JCPenney if I'm feeling fancy, and you spend $25 on a, you know, on a zip up hoodie.
The thing that confuses me a great deal, this is just really off topic, but in terms of, you know, buying from Sky on the corner, is there's a ton of, minority street vendors,
right,
that are all selling Make America Great Again hats.
Ooh.
Which are like kind of strange.
That is very strange. I'm conflicted because I'm happy that money isn't going to the campaign. Right. Campaign to reelect the current president. However, none of those hats should be. So that is a quandary.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm a little bit, I never see anyone actually wear those hats. So I'm not sure, like, clearly they are being consumed, but it seems like as soon as they exit a rally, they like disappear into some sort of alternate dimension.
Yeah,
it's like clan hoods or something.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like people are ashamed of them and should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to break this to you. I know it's been a while since you've been through one of these. Since you've been to this rodeo, it's going to get a lot worse. So, not the hats, the winter, David.
Well, yeah. I mean, not just the hats.
Right. Oh, we don't need to be bummers. We've got stuff to talk about. We've got news. We've got all the usual regular show stuff. So any objections getting started?
Mm-mm.
All right. So we've got the usual things: the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see, David, you brought the story that is the biggest, most current headline today. So what is going on with the PlayStation Classic?
Unfortunately, not much.
go ahead.
Yeah, so they released their list of what games are going to be included, and it's super, super meh. The big ones I saw were Final Fantasy VII and Metal Gear Solid. Let's see, Resident Evil Siphon Filter, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, most of the games that are, I don't know, that era was known for, like, you know, the Spyros and the Bandicoots and stuff like that, aren't actually going to be included. And Polygon, actually, the article I, you know, linked in for this story, has a sort of a discussion of this, basically arguing that it comes down mostly to licensing, both in terms of like music, sports, and cars, and the fact that a lot of these things recently got HD remakes, and then the fact that most of the good games for PlayStation aren't first party.
Right, right. Meaning that even though there are third-party games on this thing, they only have so much money they can spend on licensing additional things. You know, yeah, as opposed to putting out a bunch of Sony stuff.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, the licensing stuff just seems kind of BS to me. Like, I don't understand how you even need to license cars. That seems kind of like, you know, being able to depict real life would be inherently under, you know, fair use.
Not when there's money to be made.
Yeah, a car's design is trademarked, and also it's a big deal in those games that, like, if you are driving a Bugatti, it needs to be that you're driving a Bugatti. It's kind of like how Grand Theft Auto cars are like sound-alikes. Sound-alikes and look-alikes. It's like, this is a, you know, sports car-esque thing as opposed to being a Mustang, etc.
Yeah, I know. That just seems kind of like BS to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just I see very little reason to buy this for the games, actually.
Yeah, most of the big stuff we already knew from the earlier leak of like 5 or 7 titles that were put out. Like, we knew FF7 was going to be on this, or did we? Fuck, I know we knew Wild Arms. FF7 was heavily rumored.
Yeah, Wild Arms is maybe the only reason I would get it. I'd prefer pretty strongly the Japanese version, because I've never played Parasite Eve, and it always just its brand of craziness always intrigued me.
Yep, Parasite Eve is cool. The Japanese one is just a little bit heavier in RPG stuff in general, having Arthur Ladd. Both of these have Persona. It's actually kind of crazy that the US one has Persona. Didn't expect that. Didn't see that coming. The thing that makes this redundant, and I forget if any of us said this before, it was probably Jala. If it was stated, because her head is on her shoulders related to these things. But this thing doesn't seem necessary because PlayStation Vitas exist, and they can play a lot of, if not all, of these games portably too.
It also just seems like, I don't know, like, I think to a certain degree this falls under the, you know, this is why we can't have nice things category, but even if it doesn't, like, this just really isn't the PlayStation, you know, classic. Like, this is not even remotely representative of, you know, kind of the idea of, like, what, you know, what Nintendo was doing with, you know, being a representative selection of the games.
So it's funny, right? Because the thing that made the PlayStation, and especially the PlayStation 2, so powerful was its wide library, right? The fact that they had such huge third-party support, and those third-party games were the necessary, like, heavy hitters. You bought the system to play those, right? Nintendo, it was always seen as a weakness that everything worth playing on them was made by Nintendo, if not everything, then most. Right. However, with these, you know, classic re-releases, that thing that was such a huge boon for Sony and the PlayStation ends up being like its undoing because, like, their first party stable was neat, but it wasn't everything. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm positive there are people who have really good recollections of Ridge Racer 4 or Ridge Racer Type 4 or whatever. But, like, that's not really what I think of when it comes to that era, right? And that system in particular.
Well, and I don't know. I'm a little surprised that they couldn't get, like, any of the platformer, any of the Spyro or, you know, Crash Bandicoot or, you know, any of those sorts of games.
Yeah, yeah. The only platformer they have on here is Rayman, and that's 2D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that
can we talk about
weird.
the the biggest casualty on this list, though, for the games that aren't going to be on, which has nothing to do with licensing, which is Ape Escape. Am I the only one who played Ape Escape?
I played a demo of Ape Escape at Kmart, and I thought it was neat. Please go, because this is something I didn't think about when they announced it before either.
Yeah, I think when I saw this, I called it out. I can't remember if it was on Slack or we actually mentioned it on the show. But yeah, the controllers don't have the analog sticks.
Right.
And Ape Escape was like the big, you know, killer app for analog sticks.
You couldn't play it without the DualShock.
No, you couldn't. And the game is fantastic. I actually went back to it a while ago, and it holds up remarkably. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adore the game. We sunk so much time into it, and it's then since kind of disappeared from the earth.
Yeah.
And I would have been really hopeful. Like, if anything could get me to, like, go back to PlayStation 1, this game would be it, Ape Escape.
Yeah.
You don't understand the bonus that some executive got for cutting 20 cents per unit.
Yeah, right.
Blah.
So unfortunate on that front. And I had not thought about Ape Escape in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And
don't worry, neither has anyone else.
Fair, too fair.
Yeah. There are some cool things on here, though. Like, it's neat to see Jumping Flash put on there. We played that for WoW earlier this year, and that is still incredibly fun and really kind of like emblematic of super, super early PlayStation and a different approach to 3D platforming. Also, Mr. Driller is a very neat puzzle game. Mm. Yeah.
I kind of wonder, I don't know why they didn't just, like, if third party's their thing, why don't they just be like, hey, whoever, you know, make the third party pack or whatever that'll plug into our thing.
Yeah, release the Konami box.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. Any final thoughts on the PlayStation Classic?
No. Sad it wasn't more than it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, sadly, I think this probably will truly be my final thoughts on the PlayStation Classic.
I'll be curious to. I'm sure somebody in the audience will get it and play it and have some fun with it. I'll be curious to hear what their thoughts are.
Oh, go ahead.
I think it's a good example of how well Nintendo games age in comparison to PlayStation games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think? So would that be true if they had been able to play, bring in the games that, like, people actually want on this system?
I don't know. I would be. I also would think that I would feel pretty similar about an N64 classic, but that is not necessarily a popular opinion for people of a certain age. So, Yeah. I want to hear, Dennis, I didn't, no, to tell me, what's going on with Twitch and Harmonix? Because this thing seems like it'll be fun.
And so you, I will admit, probably know more about karaoke and what makes it fun than I do. Although I have tried my hand a fair number of times. Mm-hmm. Twitch has been actively exploring ways to do games that are more, you know, kind of built around Twitch. And we've seen a lot of devs do stuff like this. I think one of the Tomb Raider games had a mode where, you know, people could choose what obstacles you were going to see next. And
yeah,
and just lots of different games have had
Jackbox various, spectacularly. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. So lots of different levels of Twitch integration there. But this one kind of officially sponsored by Twitch, and I think it's the first one that's gotten this level of support from them, is an interesting zag. They've teamed up with Harmonix, and they are making a Twitch Sings karaoke game. And I really like the fun of karaoke in my mind is being kind of with people and seeing them perform and kind of the entire communal experience. But I worry about how well that's going to transition when you have one designated singer and everyone else has a designated audience. Like, the thing that makes karaoke fun in my mind is everyone's going to take their turn on stage, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to, try their hand in the arena. No one's going to be the skeptic sitting on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
However, it feels like this Twitch Sings karaoke game is just an invitation for everyone to kind of be the critic and not the participant.
Yeah.
So the idea is, like, you know, people can, I guess, with Twitch comments, trigger lights on maybe a fake stage that the person is going to be on. That's not exactly clear. Mm-hmm. And then there are also going to be challenges which I don't know how you do a challenge in a karaoke song. Maybe like make the lyrics disappear for a little bit or sing the harmony of this part or something like this. I don't know. But yeah, it's an interesting idea. I wanted to invite thoughts on it just because I know there are people who spend more time on karaoke here than I do. But I'm like kind of healthily skeptical at this point.
So I wonder, I don't know who it was. You know, I heard some commentary a while back just arguing that there's a specific, I don't know if you'd say like genre or monetization scheme or something like that of indie game that basically boils down to often like horror games that are entirely designed around allowing streamers to just like irrationally react to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stream screamers. Yeah.
Say that again?
Stream screamers?
Yeah. And I feel like that's almost strikes me as being what this is, in that like its basic target is every you know, professional Twitch streamer will have to buy it to do at least, you know, to do one episode.
Oh yeah.
The obligatory episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then like no one ever had, I mean, maybe it'll be a hit, but like no one then ever has to play it again. They've made their money.
I guess so. In the example they showed on the stage, like they showed the chat interaction and literally 90% of it is people typing along with the lyrics. Like what?
It can be fun. Yeah. Feeling like you're participating with it.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like it, when I, you know, go to karaoke and watch other people, you know, everybody sings along in the crowd. That's your version of it.
Have you ever gone to karaoke and purely watched the other people though?
I mean, I've always gone to sing myself, but watching other people is a huge part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. you spend more time watching other people than doing it yourself. I would really love to see if they built in like a rotation. Like you sign into a party, you know, with yourself and whoever is going to be joining you, you know, in your karaoke jam or whatever, and the stream goes out just from the software or whatever or what have you, mm-hmm. and then it's like, okay, now it is, you know, so and so's turn. Admittedly, still in their home, but like you're doing it with a handful of your friends and then whatever audience is there.
That starts
to feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Or, you know, like streamers can have their friends over and they do this streaming and then other people can feel like they're, you know, they're at the same party. Like, and to what David is saying about, you know, like every Twitch streamer is going to have to pick this up to, you know, to try it out, you know, just for that one episode. Like karaoke, even at the best, is a humiliating experience. Even if you're like really good, there's a certain humiliation in being like, oh, you're the guy who's good at karaoke, you know, or you're the guy who gets way too into it. But it is humiliation with support. The thing that I could see going wrong is with popular people coming in and like just taking a shit on the person singing. Like with our Twitch audiences, I could see it being good and fun. With a general one, I would not want to be there with somebody like making fun of your appearance or saying you suck, blah, blah, blah. That just doesn't happen at karaoke. I sound like I'm like proselytizing about this. Anybody who's been to it can attest though, like no matter what, no matter how shy, no matter how timid the person was, no matter how much they sucked, you clap at the end and you cheer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because everybody gets to feel good.
Yeah.
And you bring beer.
Yes, the beer is a part of it.
The beer is the fuel.
Yeah. I could see things going horribly wrong for like a Ninja Sings segment, though.
Yeah.
You know, just along the lines you're describing. However, it is a cool idea that maybe it's like, hey, put your name in the chat and you, if you own the thing, you know, the stream would automatically switch over to you and then suddenly you're singing on... I can't name another streamer other than Ninja, but you're like, you know, they are now hosting you as you sing your bit and then they'll be like every other one or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing that concerns me about this, just looking at the interface and stuff, they've got the Rock Band note annotation kind of thing for helping track what the melody line looks like and the pitch and things like that. That's fine and good for letting you know just kind of the way through a song that you might not know that well. However, if they are scoring based on that, a crappy thing that happens with Rock Band is singers will become really mechanical about singing exactly what they think the computer wants to hear, as opposed to singing what sounds good. So I hope that that scoring is not mandatory, or it doesn't like punish you for doing your own thing or making it your own. Right. Because the idea of karaoke for score just sounds like a fucking nightmare to me.
So my exposure to this is literally only the Yakuza games, but they lead me to believe that, at least in like Japan, karaoke is something people do all the time. I have no idea if that's true, but if it is, could any of that like, you know, or, you know, play into this in terms of like, you know, the, how karaoke might be, you know, parts of, you know, might be done outside the US
in different cultures and things.
Like
in different cultures.
Yeah.
You know, it's huge in Asia. If they were smart, they would absolutely have licensing deals that would let them take advantage of that, of that popularity. However, like, you know, do a search. There's always karaoke going on wherever you're at. You know, even here in Mansfield, there is karaoke 5 nights of the week. You know, some of it's run by the same people, but, you know, you can chase it around and find it. Like, it's kind of always happening. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a huge dork for this. I will own it. I think it is a good time. I love singing. I love singing in front of people. I love butchering popular songs.
Oh, you far from butcher anything you sing, dude.
Don't
sell yourself short.
You are too kind. It's a cool thing, and I'm happy to see them throwing their lot in. I'm happy to see Harmonix still doing stuff.
Are they some type of like time wizards that can just sort of drop out of the timeline for years at a time?
They end up doing stuff that doesn't make a huge splash. Like, they went away after Rock Band for a while. They did a bunch of stuff, Dance Central on the Kinect for a while, like toward the end of that generation. And then a few years ago, they did at least one or two things on Steam. I think they did another like a Fallout Amplitude that didn't do very well. They did that board game, Dennis, that card game. Was it Drop Mix?
Yeah, Drop Mix.
Yeah. Here recently. So they're not time wizards. They just end up doing stuff that is not Rock Band for a while. It seems like they disappear, but they're just in a less visible spot.
They're just hiding.
Yes. They're just hiding, making financially unsuccessful materials. Yeah. I'm excited. I signed up for the beta while we were talking. So
sweet.
Yeah. I will be more than happy to stream that. So
I will be more than happy to watch.
Cool.
I wonder how long it is before we get the Rock Band classic.
I don't know. Just like a box that has all the Rock Band stuff and just and just plays Rock Band.
Just the tiny toy guitar to make the controls really difficult.
Usually they'll plug it directly into your HDMI port. No, nothing else, and you're good to go.
I would like it quite a bit. That's what they thought. That's what they tried to make Guitar Hero Live, but it never really panned out.
Yeah.
Let's see, Ben, with the obligatory No Man's Sky story. Why are they trying to be Subnautica?
Yeah, if there's any doubt that they weren't basing their updates based on Subnautica. they released an update today called The Abyss, and it basically developed their underwater features, and it added 5 different biomes, which is something that Subnautica is kind of known for with their game. They added animals that are based on, like, the depth that you are underwater. There's underwater base building. So, yeah, it's basically Subnautica now. Again, I don't mind this. I wish there was more of, like, kind of a shout-out, like, hey, we really like this game, so we wanted to kind of add something like it.
I can't imagine the lawyers would like that.
Yeah. But it's a free update, kind of following with the updates that they did last July. This update's referred to as 1.7, a very exciting name.
Yeah.
Kind of fits like the tone of the game, right? It's very, I guess,
mechanical.
mechanical.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a trailer for it. You can see some of like the monsters and stuff like that. The interesting thing is it looks like they're kind of straying away from procedurally generated monsters. It looks like they're kind of going into very customly built, you know, like animals that you would fight like underwater. There's submersibles, very similar to Subnautica, that you can go around in, but you can also use your jetpack underwater to get around. I haven't really messed with any of the underwater worlds at all, so this is something that's kind of foreign to me.
Were those a thing before this?
I'm not sure. I know there's ocean planets.
My home base is on a world that is pretty much small island chains and predominantly water.
Okay.
And it gets boring right now very quickly when you start traveling around underwater. There's not a lot. There are some unique animals that can only be found underwater, but you really only go looking for them if you're trying to get the, you know, every animal discovered thing for a planet.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just not really worth it. This makes it
Wait,
look really,
isn't
really
every
cool.
animal a unique animal? Isn't that the whole thing?
Correct.
Yeah.
The unique species per planet, I guess. So yeah, there's not a lot of reason to go underwater right now. However, this makes it look amazing. And as someone who's kind of sunk some more time into No Man's Sky, especially with the new update, I'm pretty excited for it.
Nice.
I'm glad that I got to this before I did my whole base build out. Cause I think right now you can build bases underwater, but there's no like viewports to be able to see. So this seems like they really now accommodate the idea that you would want to be in a base that everything is kind of visible underwater.
Yeah. Huh.
They have a weird thing that they tout with it where there's an underwater monster with a single eye and it has like a field of view that they like convey and they're like, stay away from this monster. I don't know. It's kind of goofy.
Yeah. It looks scary though. I thought it was shooting a beam out of its eye.
I'm very proud of the team making this. Like, I know they got crushed originally, but they've really like they've turned No Man's Sky into something genuinely cool and delightful. And you know, it still does have that little bit of just David, you talked about when everything is random, nothing is meaningful. It still has a little bit of that. Once you get churning through planets, but the point of hitting that or that you know that point in the game is so much further in now. And it just feels like there's a lot more in this game that is worth seeing now.
Nice.
Yeah, I will mention they added like 7 hours of gameplay for like narrative gameplay, like an addition. So probably like missions that are designed to help you explore like the new mechanics of the underwater stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know how. So every time there's one of these big updates, they drop the price of the game. So at the time when people are most prone to buy it, right? Like, oh, I'm excited about underwater stuff. Cool, let's do it. And they keep on putting out these huge things for free. I wonder, like, how are they sustainable?
Like, a bunch of people bought the game up front.
they pre-ordered these expansions.
Yeah. So he actually talked about this in an interview I read for the next update, where he was talking about that. And he kind of did say he's like, we're kind of bad businessmen. Like, we don't really have this formatted to milk a ton of money. And, you know, I would love to say that's intentional and altruistic, but it's more just kind of, we don't really know what we're doing.
Oh yeah.
We have enough money to keep on doing this and we love doing it. And so we're going to keep on doing it was essentially his message.
That worries me in a game that worries me in a game that requires servers.
Very so, fail. Although this is so much a PS4 poster child that there's no way Sony would let it drop.
True.
Yeah, I feel like potentially a more cynical take. I am not saying I've any evidence of this, but it's just like if they want to not be toxic for the rest of their careers, they kind of have to make good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, like, I don't necessarily think that's their motivation, but it probably is at least true.
Well, I think they've moved out of updates being a work of apology and into it being a labor of love. that it's not just they're trying to make this thing that the game that they sold to people. It's that they're now truly doing the things that they're excited about and realizing stuff that they would have wanted to do even if there had never been a blow up about the game.
Yeah.
I'm more saying though, like even if that's the case in reality, what the target they really have to get over is that being the reputation, you know?
Mm, sure.
I mean, yeah. I definitely agree with you. Like, I think they have, you know, gotten to the point where they've, you know, made good, but.
Yeah. Two immutable facts are colliding. The first is that first impressions are made instantly and last an eternity. And the other being people online will always be dicks.
Yep.
So in every comment will be, hey, remember those first 6 months after No Man's Sky came out? Lol. And then they'll scurry away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Perception is tough. Narrative is tough. Yeah, but this looks neat. I keep on thinking No Man's Sky is a game that I ought to go back to. And then after the next update came out, waited a little bit, and now they add a new dimension to the game with the underwater stuff. I kind of worry about going in and investing time in this if they're just going to add more cool shit that'll I don't know.
Yeah,
well, and I think they with next was the update that kind of was like, all right, wipe it, start from the beginning.
Right.
I don't even think then your progress was lost, but it was like that was the update where it's like it's probably worth starting from scratch if you want to get the most out of this.
Yeah,
I think everything from here is kind of more with a mind towards people who have been playing for a while or kind of expanding versus resetting experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I dig it. I've got a story that is a Cole Ross classic. A thing is happening, but this is
happening.
Well, a thing that's happening is. That those same Resident Evil games that are brought to every new system when it comes out, those are going to be coming to the Switch. When I say those same three Resident Evils, of course, I mean Resident Evil 4, the remake of Resident Evil 1, and the bastard game that no one should play, Resident Evil 0. So they're going to be releasing in 2019, according to a tweet from Capcom UK. All of this stands to reason. This just means, though, you get to play the two best Resident Evil games on your Switch, which is a good place to play video games. I am led to believe by my own experience, those two best being the remake and 4.
I think I'm pretty excited about this. I think I'm going to pick up 4 for the Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be really fun just to pick up and play an area and then put it down.
Does the Switch have dual thumbsticks?
Yes. But Resident Evil 4 doesn't use two thumbsticks.
Doesn't it?
No. You only aim when you're standing still. Yeah, you play it with just the one bad boy.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I remember that. I remember just getting really frustrated that they'd have enemies hide behind doorways when you have no way to stop them from getting you.
Yeah, it's designed around that limitation very well. But
knife through the doorway, David.
Yep, every time, just do it. That's fine. Yeah,
I'm just imagining the last action hero just walk into the room and shoot into the closet.
Just in case, take that, Kyle MacLachlan. He wasn't in the last action hero, as far as I remember. I'm thinking of that scene from Blue Velvet.
I'm thinking of the scene from Burn After Reading.
Oh God. it's been awesome since I've seen that. I like that movie. I think that movie got shit on because it came out after No Country for Old Men. It was a Coen Brothers ass movie. Like it was them letting their hair down after making a masterpiece. Mm. Yeah, Burn After Reading is good. George Clooney's fuck chair. Come on.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I was in the mood for some levity, so I asked, what is the dumbest way that you've died in a video game? And on limits are both in-game bad decisions and outside factors.
Okay.
Such as, someone bursting in or a cat deciding to jump on you.
Yeah, I think
I thought you were meaning like if you've died outside of a video game and you're able to talk to us, we definitely want to hear about it.
If you die in real life, you die in the game. I mean, like eventually, probably. So I'll get us started here with Juan, who says, first time fighting a Tonberry in Final Fantasy X. Everyone told me to run if I ever found one, but I had to see what happens when he finally gets to the party. I lost an hour of grinding and I learned a valuable lesson.
So what is a Tonberry?
A Tonberry, these are the enemies that are like little cloaked, if I say lizard dudes, it'll probably evoke the wrong image, but they're real dumpy, but they have glowing yellow eyes and like little tails. The thing is, they carry a lantern, and in every game, they approach the party very slowly, like taking a step every turn. And if they reach the party, then either one person dies or everybody dies, depending on the game and depending on which version of the Tonberry it is.
Man, I played Final Fantasy X to completion,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think I ever saw one of these.
I cannot recall enough of that game's treatment of this enemy. But I believe Juan when he says it's a real bad thing. just like Juan should have believed his friends. But you know, it's a lesson that he learned. I don't know why I'm rubbing it in.
Because it's fun to think about someone knowing better and getting it anyway.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean that's
what this segment, that's what this question is all about.
Yeah, just a little bit of lighthearted Schadenfreude, because we all have one of these stories. Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, I suppose the dumbest way I died in a game or goes to Demon Souls. I killed Phalanx and Bolteria 1-1, and was just about to touch the bonfire, and the level just disappeared. I fell forever and died in nothingness. Only happened once, thankfully. All I could do was laugh.
Yeah, Black 13 threw you toe dash. That's a Dark Tower thing. That is very frustrating. Just like die for no reason. And I'm sure that you felt like it was something you did wrong until you realized it was a glitch. It's happened to me.
Yeah, go online, try to find other people that have had it. It's like, nope, just you.
Yeah.
This was not intended.
Oh, well. But yeah, Phalanx. I mean, especially because, I don't know, like you kill Phalanx and all of a sudden you have not just a bunch of souls, but finally the ability to use them to level up. I love Demon Souls. That's a very good video game. David, what does Brian say?
Brian says, I didn't jump over the very first Goomba in Super Mario Bros. 3. Immediately after talking up how good I am at the game to a friend.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know that you were asking for it by doing that. yeah, that's just a fun prank. Fun pranks we play on ourselves. Dennis, what does Charles say?
He says Dark Souls. So I have a feeling we're going to hear lots of Souls games. On the stairs leading up to the aqueducts on the way into Blighttown, after killing the dude on the stairs, the target switched to the firebomb guy below me, and I ran off the stairs. It was the first time I lost a million souls, having just started New Game Plus. I hope that is not a literal million souls. That's terrifying.
Yeah, you can lose a million souls.
Oof.
Yeah. Yep, I believe that too. Wily camera will get you. Blighttown is a scourge. I got the remaster, and I'm curious to see how that plays because most of my memories of Blighttown are on the Xbox 360. So to my mind, the frame rate issues are just kind of baked into that area. I am curious to see if it's any better running smooth. However, I just know it's going to be shit. So yeah, no good. Let's see. Carson says, in Final Fantasy XIV, I was in a raid fight where there are no walls around the fight arena, and like a dumbass, I jump off the side at the beginning of the fight. Cue everyone in the 8-person party to laugh at me for the remainder of the fight. At the end, it was all good, and I got full commendations for the blunder that made everyone laugh.
It's good. Which that turned out well. Otherwise, you'd be a pariah to this day.
Yes, if it was a total party wipe.
This could... Okay, so this was, I take it, the MMO Final Fantasy?
The second MMO Final Fantasy, yeah. They're 11 and 14 are MMOs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. I wish I would have been there in the moment because, like, you know, the only proper reaction, like, when they say, like, hey, what happened? You just say, I got scared. It just, if that was me, it just, there was a way you could have made that funnier, Carson. I'll just pretend you said, I got scared. Yeah, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on this one, Carson. I'm being real hard on Carson. Sorry, Carson. Let's see.
He's
Ben.
The guy who shook your hand. You're angry. Understandable.
Ah,
yeah.
sorry, Ben. What does Greg say?
Greg says, I was playing Skyrim one night, walking on a path from one location to another in a non-hostile area of the world. Since it didn't require my full attention, I had the TV on in the background and was looking at it now and then. With nothing else on, I ended up on TMZ. Not something I usually watch, but it was fine. That is, until they ran a story that involved Kate Upton somehow. I got so mesmerized watching her prance around in a bikini, I ended up going way off track of the game, falling off a cliff, dying, and having to redo the trip over again. Lesson learned. So, the lesson is don't watch TMZ, I guess?
Maybe.
What's the opposite of nerd sniping?
What do you mean nerd sniping? What's that?
That's where you give someone a problem and they lose the ability to focus on anything else. And so if you want to kill a person, you ask them this when they're crossing the street and then they'll die by oncoming traffic.
Is this a thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh. Yeah. I don't know. Like this just sounds like a scenario from like Who Framed Roger Rabbit or one of those cartoons where the wolf, like, you know, the wolf sees a sexy lady and his eyes turn into big hearts. And he falls over and, you know, this feels like a real life cartoon to me.
You got Upton.
Yep. David, what does Adam say?
Adam says, got another Halo multiplayer death where after getting beat down, I somehow ended up down in the ground. And then he posts a picture where he is literally, like, you can only see him from the waist up, just, like, stuck in the ground.
Oh, yeah. No, like, it was, like, again, cartoon situations happening over and over again. It's like he was pounded straight into the ground by John Henry. Yeah, no, he was Adam was the victim of a steel-driving man.
This is an angle that Rooster Teeth Productions would have killed for.
Oh yeah, to make this happen at will, please.
Mm-hmm. Also, I appreciate that folklore reference.
Oh yeah, it's a good story. Dennis, what does Jack say?
He says, over the years, I've quote unquote gone on tilt while playing Souls games many, many times. This usually involves a run to retrieve a hefty bundle of precious souls. And when I go on tilt, I decide that the best strategy is to run from the bonfire and roll through literally everything until I find that sweet, sweet bloodstain. And absolutely do not, under any circumstances, thin out the horde of pursuing enemies. This typically ends with me uncontrollably rolling around a half dozen tightly packed enemies, a lot of expletive-laced shouting and bargaining with myself that it'll only take 45 minutes to build up that soul stack again. Rinse and repeat. These games never punish me. I punish myself.
See, the thing is, that works just enough for you to, like, not be unreasonable to take that tack.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So don't blame yourself. It worked in the past. It can work again. It just didn't work those times. Cheer up, champ. Michael says, I used to play Command & Conquer heavily in college. I always played the same side, and my friend got extremely annoyed at it. So he snuck up onto my laptop and changed some key values in the .ini files. Suddenly, he was positively steamrolling me in multiplayer with his favorite side, now made of atomic supermen. sorry, I didn't expect the Futurama reference there. I caught on when I finally broke ranks and played the same side as him. Dirty cheater. Come on. That's a good story.
Hey, being predictable can be abused in all kinds of ways.
Yes, it can. From Rock, Paper, Scissors up to Command & Conquer and beyond. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Noah say?
Noah says, Dark Souls. Talking to the magic merchant in New Londo. accidentally press circle one too many times and exit the shop menu, backstep off a cliff to my death.
I have literally done that.
That is really good. Yeah, that is similar to any number of times I have died by, like, you know, finished doing my business with a merchant. That sounded like I was pooping with a merchant. finished up my transaction, think, okay, I'm near this guy, so I'm safe. I'm going to set down my controller. Oh, wait, no, I won't, because when I set down my controller, I will press the strong attack button, and I am now having my ass handed to me by insert the name of a merchant that I can't think of right now. Yeah. Lots of deaths.
One of the best changes from PlayStation 3 to PlayStation 4 was making the triggers concave so that they would not do that when you set it down.
Yeah. Oh, well, let's see. David, what does Austin say?
Austin says, weirdest way I've ever died / lost in a game was back when I lived with my old roommate. I was in a heated StarCraft 2 match that was deciding the tournament, and right before the final engagement, she decided to run into my room and spin my chair around, show me how good her boobs looked that day. Needless to say, I lost the engagement and the tournament, but still didn't say I lost the day.
The first time I read this, I read it as he was playing StarCraft with his roommate and a girl ran in. I was like, and she was comfortable doing that with your roommate right there? But I think I understand a little bit better now.
Yes. Yeah. That is very funny.
I feel like we have noticed a you know trend of, you know, boobs being our secret weakness.
You got Upton'd.
I'm gonna lobby for that not to be an ongoing joke. for no particular reason. Yeah. No, that's pretty good. Yeah, whatever, you still came out ahead. Let's see, Dennis, what does Angie say?
Angie says, I cannot decide. Once I walked into a cave without light and fell into a pit, and another time I got eaten by a Gru. I guess the light issue was the dumbest way.
Yeah, talking about Zork,
them Gru.
Yeah, them Gru. If you want to have some fun, look up, do a Google image search for Grus. So, you know, like, obviously it's a text game. Eventually there was official art of them. Like, Grus canonically are like big fuzzy things, big fuzzy monsters with prominent yellow eyes. However, Gru is also kind of an affectionate name given to any really fluffy black cat. Where a photo is taken from an angle where all you see is the fluff and their eyes poking out of the fluff. So it's a good image search all around, I think.
Also the name of the lead in Despicable Me, I believe.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, that's probably going to pollute the namespace.
Well, I think, yeah. Actually, I think that might be GRU versus GRUE.
Yes. So
yeah, I'm not going to lie. A lot of these images are straight up terrifying.
of the cats or the...
the monsters. If you do just a Google image search for Gru.
Uh-huh.
Freaking deviant art has had their day in just horrifying interpretations of what creature might be destroying you.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. It's also related to construction equipment for some reason too.
Yes. Yeah, but it's and that weirdly that becomes worse if you put in Gru cat. So I've got a bunch of backhoes and front end loaders and then a couple of cats. Yeah.
Yeah. But you got to do minus caterpillar.
Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense actually.
There's one picture that's a monster that looks like a construction like crane, so best of both worlds.
Yeah. Let's see. So Kian says, sorry, I didn't see that drop there. They link a video. Again, this is Dark Souls. It appears to be Dark Souls 3, possibly. Right. Yes. Okay, so this is Dark Souls 3. They are trying to... Oh, this appears to be... sorry, I'm going to stop guessing what this is. Trying to roll across a gap, but instead falling a very long distance right into the attack range of a very angry monster. Yeah. Yeah, you thought you could make it. It looked like it was right there.
Yeah, it looked good. It seems so good at the time.
Yep. Let's see, Ben, what does Steven say?
Steven says, cars blowing up in Fallout is always a great way to die.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit, especially when it's not your fault, when it's an enemy accidentally hitting it.
I feel like similar to that is the Super Mutant Suiciders, the first time that happens out of nowhere.
Can you clarify?
At least in Fallout 4, the Super Mutants will often have at least one guy who's basically carries fat boy.
Yeah.
Like a football, and will run up to you and, you know, spike it.
Oh, God. Yeah, that is not so in
basically,
pre-4 games.
The first time around, before you know what to do, you just hear this weird beeping noise, and all of a sudden the world goes white.
Very good. And then finally, David, what does Michael say?
Michael says that I should not navigate away to see cute cat pictures. Michael says, I was playing my little brother in GoldenEye 64. He threw the proximity bomb at me, trying to get it to stick. I shot bomb midair and got us both.
Ha! At least you took him with you. So mine is not very specific. I've got two general ones to make up for the lack of specificity. One, in any game where it's possible, in any RPG where it's possible to equip a piece of item that drains your health, I have put it on, left it on, and then forgot that I had it on and just fell over dead without realizing what was going on. Additionally, I will lump in any time I was playing a game on a stream and got cocky about having not just like, oh, I don't need to save. It's fine. It's not been that long. And then I'll die and then have to cover a shitload of ground again. So those are my two. Ben, how about you?
I think I'm going to go with Magic the Gathering on this, playing online and misclicking to your death. So like, I'll give you an example. You play a card that gives the target player extra turn, but it also triggers ability to mill somebody for two cards. And then you just accidentally click the wrong player because you think the triggers are in a different order. And then you end up giving the opponent an additional turn and then milling yourself and then dying.
Womp, so, womp.
Yeah. Very frustrating.
Yeah. David, how about you?
So I'm having a hard time thinking of specific instances. You know, I remember there being a number of instances of me just pissing off the wrong NPC in EverQuest, but I'm having trouble remembering any of the specifics of it.
Oh, like, I mean, specifically, it was a terrible thing. You would walk up to an NPC, try to type their keyword, forget that you hadn't activated the text edit. You know, like you hadn't put in you hadn't clicked on the text box. You would press A, which would auto attack, and it would, you know, hit them and they would destroy you as a level one. Like, that's the reason why every prominent quest giver they were just standing on a mountain of corpses outside Freeport.
You know, as you do.
Yeah.
And heaven forbid you piss off the Freeport guards.
No, yeah. No, well, they're corrupt.
Yeah.
Outside of the Temple District, they're all, you know, they're all in the take. So,
yeah. So basically what I mean is, heaven forbid you roll any class other than rogue.
Right.
Yeah. But one that wasn't me, but was someone else, but I still love this story, is I very briefly was in a Battlefield 2 clan, and one of the people in our clan was just amazing at the jet fighters. Ooh. And, you know, in that game, it was very much something where someone who, if you weren't amazingly good and, you know, your team wasn't super organized and someone on the other team was good, you know, there was just nothing you could do. They could just steamroll you. One of our matches, it was just, you know, a bunch of people from the clan just mess around. And one of the guys on my team, the very first thing he did is, like, you know, ran over and, you know, C4'd a whole bunch of the enemy's resources, including one of the jets. And so literally, like, a half hour later into the game, this guy is, you know, repeatedly taking us out and finally comes in. We're all on a armored personnel carrier, and he comes in on a bombing run. And my teammate, you know, triggers the plastic explosives and just, you know, kills him right before he can get us. And we just hear him, you know, just cursing up a storm over whatever the equivalent of Discord back then was.
Probably Vent or Roger Wilco, most likely.
Yeah. So that was just what I remembered of, you know, I always in those sorts of games had the idea of like, oh yeah, I could just put a you know, C4 on the bottom of this vehicle and, you know, someday I'll use that to take someone out. But it never really happens other than that one time.
Very good. God, I love Battlefield stories like that. That game was so good for those. Might still be, but like there was something very specific about 1942 and 2 that seemed to make those. Then Dennis.
Yeah, so Ben reminded me of one. So you know, I play a lot of XCOM, and I also it's one of the games that I kind of know well enough that I can play it without sound, and I have a bad habit of setting my headphones on the, like, the top right portion of my desk, which is all well and good unless you're trying to, like, scroll far to the right, and you move your mouse too far and it hits your headphones and will click for you. And right clicking in the game is basically locking in your action. And in a game like XCOM, if you're playing on Iron Man, there is no undoing that mistake.
Yeah.
And so I have literally ended runs in Iron Man mode because of a dumb just forgetting my headphones were there.
Oh no.
It'd be, you know, funny if I did it once. I've had that happen to me at least 3 times. So eventually I'm going to put my headphones somewhere else, but until then I will be dooming myself with unintentional right clicks. The original one that I had in mind is I'm a grenade perfectionist. Like, I get hung up on making sure that I throw and place the grenade exactly where I want it. And this is thinking about, like, Modern Warfare 2, which means I have an unusual number of deaths from just having the grenade explode my hand because I'm, like, you know, tongue sticking out, one eye closed, aiming it just right before I throw it and kind of forget that there's a timer on those things.
Yeah. Definitely, like, working all the angles. I was trying to think of a more gory kind of euphemism or version of paralysis by analysis, but I couldn't think of a synonym for exploded that rhymed with paralysis. So there are the component parts of a joke for you. It's a joke kit, as it were.
It is vaporization by quantization.
Ooh, very good. Yeah. Very neat. We are all a bunch of dipshits, and that's okay.
We should go sing karaoke.
Yeah. Woohoo. Thank you, everybody, for responding to that. If you want to participate, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons or early evenings. Thank you, Dennis, for putting this up.
My pleasure.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you first. What you been playing, buddy?
Yeah, I've been racking up a roster to discuss, so I gotta try to keep it to the highlights here because there's been a ton. You know, I've been doing all my old favorites, so I've been playing a bunch of XCOM, etc. But on the new game front, and on the PS4 front, I picked up the Wipeout Omega Collection, specifically because the entire game is VR compatible.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. And let me tell you what.
Seems that seems like a game designed to make you throw up.
If VR makes you throw up, then probably yes. If not, if you're one of the lucky few, it is like the racing experience that I've wanted from VR.
That's
everything
great.
It's just sleek. It has looking through turns, and the tracks are doing these kind of rolls and going upside down and all that craziness, which again lends itself to the pukey side. But if you can stand that, it is really thrilling to just go through these kind of twisty turny tracks. So that's awesome. The Omega collection is literally just Wipeout HD, Wipeout HD Fury, and the PlayStation Vita, whatever that was, 2048, I think.
Nice.
All kind of reskinned and made prettier for the PS4, and then given this VR support. And so I actually got Wipeout as one of the two apology games from the big PlayStation Network hack.
Okay.
And so I've played them completely before, and there's nothing new other than VR, but it feels like a completely different game.
It just recontextualizes it for you.
Yeah. The best analogy I can think of is, when you're up on a screen, even if you're using the first person cockpit and you're racing or whatever, it always feels a little bit like playing with Hot Wheels. Like, especially if your camera's back and behind, which is, I think, how most people race. Like, it's just, the passing and everything doesn't really have a weight to it. When you're in VR, like it feels like you're passing something giant. It feels like you're passing something car sized when you make your move, and you can look over and see that next to you, or watch it cut you off and kind of ram you to the side. And that is just a really cool, thrilling experience on top of tracks that are challenging enough to stay off the wall of to begin with.
Right.
So, it is awesome, like I said, to be racing in a time trial. You're just yourself on the track, looking through the curves, kind of picking your lines, and then rolling with the ship as you go. But then throw in a bunch of other, I don't know what you call them, hover cars? They're not Wipeouts. whatever they are.
They're just racers.
Throw other racers on the track. Like, when you're on someone's tail, like the heat from their engines is like blurring your vision, and it all feels just incredibly cool.
Yeah.
So that has been a ton of fun, even though I've literally played nothing in this that I haven't played already.
Right.
Feels very new. So that's fun. I've tried to stream it when I've played it, so look for that. And I'll continue to do so. I don't know how well VR the camera translates to screaming.
No, I mean
streaming.
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's if I want to play the Halloween theme.
Oh, too much.
Yes.
So here's my question: does playing it in VR force you into cockpit view?
It does not, and they actually have a healthy amount of options for you. So you can play with the camera behind, and then you're just kind of following along, which I've seen done before in Trackmania had that option as well. I shouldn't say that you had that option. It was literally just the camera was sometimes behind the car, and then when you went into more like loopy stuff, it would go inside, which why that perspective change was something they thought was a good idea is beyond me. But you can play with the camera behind you. You can play in cockpit mode. Within cockpit mode, you have three different settings for how much tunnel vision it gives you, and basically it will turn the more peripheral pieces of the cockpit opaque, because one of the things that helps with motion sickness is limiting your field of view.
Right.
So it gives you options on that. I play with a completely open cockpit, so I can look behind me if I want. And then it also gives you three different options for camera roll. So the first one is that the camera does not roll either with the track or where you look or anything. It just kind of follows statically along like it would in third person view. It's just now you're in the cockpit. So everything kind of rotates around you. You're not doing any rotating. The second one is locked to the vehicle. So as the vehicle or as the track the vehicle is on kind of turns and twists, the camera will follow that. So that's where like if you invert, you're actually going upside down, et cetera. The final one is locked to the pilot's head.
Okay.
And that is where, every little tilt and roll and if you're going sideways, you're like tilting your head to the side to be able to look the way you want and all that stuff. So it gives you, they've really, really accommodated you with options for how you play the game and what view you want. Cause I could see someone really enjoying this as a VR experience just by having the game 3D.
Yes.
Like I think that would add something. But the full on intense mode is just that full on intense and, is a ton of fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Beyond that, any other questions on Wipeout Omega?
No, I'm happy that you're having fun with it. my understanding is that games that put you in a cockpit, so VR in a cockpit is generally less upsetting motion sick wise than VR games that put you in control, like right in the head of the character, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's because there's a static kind of surrounding box to give you context.
Yeah. So you have something that provides an anchor, kind of like if you're motion sick, you look at the horizon because the horizon mm-hmm. doesn't change. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, I'm not sure how well it translates to Twitch, but you know, check it out. I'll try to stream it when I play it.
Yeah. Watch Dennis when he does that and let him know how it works for him.
Let me know how long it took you to throw up.
I'm sure it would be fine.
Just put your face really close to the monitor so you throw up.
That's right. Unfocus your eyes and then you can see the secret message. Then I have gone on a good old turn-based tactics game binge over the past several weeks.
Especially since you're traveling, yeah.
Yeah, so traveling, I installed Darkest Dungeon on my work computer and have now officially gotten farther on that, the current playthrough, than I have in any of my other playthroughs. I bit the bullet. I went down to beginner difficulty and ate my pride, but have been enjoying the experience for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm through the first like boss onto the second boss and haven't lost anyone yet. Haven't really had anyone in too bad of a shape. So that is, I'm just enjoying the flavor of the game and kind of the unique mechanic of changing places in your order as you go. So that's been fun, but not too much to say about that. Cool. Darkest Dungeon is Darkest Dungeon. And it's
you're playing that on your Vita?
No, playing it on my Mac.
Oh shit. Okay. Yeah.
So I had it on Steam, not on Vita.
Okay.
That just felt like the right place to have it.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're hanging out in the hotel room, it's not too hard to be at a desk and playing.
Yeah. So I forget it was Ben who got really, really far in that, right?
You got all the way to the end boss, right?
I got to the last level and then quit after like three of my level sixes died. And it's like, I'm not going to go
too much.
I'm not going to build back from that.
This is where my town story ends.
yep.
Yeah.
That feels like a canonical ending for Darkest Dungeon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you fucking around with any of the expansion content, Dennis? Or, is that just stuff that is not loaded up?
I don't think I have it.
Okay.
I know I've seen the icon for it and I don't think it's highlighted as something that I own.
Yeah.
I have been playing with an occultist that has really good backline reach, and a plague doctor. And I've lucked into getting some of like the really powerful plague doctor items. Mm-hmm. So this guy's chance to inflict status effects is essentially like, you know, 200% on every attack.
That's not what he should be doing.
I know I will never miss with this guy. and then my front line, I kind of rotate through a couple different options. But I haven't tried any of the party setups that deal, like try to use the movement stuff to your advantage. Mm-hmm. I always just want people that are rooted in place and maybe have one option for if they get shuffled. But, generally I just haven't found anything that the payoff for shuffling people around intentionally is better than the negatives of kind of having people out of their ideal spot.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that is Darkest Dungeon. And I anticipate busting that back out as I continue to travel. Mm-hmm. Then, also on the turn-based tactics side, a new game, Frozen Synapse 2 released.
Ah, shit. You love the first one.
I love the first one. I had it on PS3 and no one really played it. This is crazy because I'm talking about turn-based strategy games. And really the next two I'm going to talk about are primarily multiplayer games. Frozen Synapse is the game where you kind of tactics style plan your turn out 5 seconds at a time, and then you kind of update your tactics because you and your enemy are moving at the same time. 5 seconds play out, and then you plan. The planning tools are incredibly, incredibly robust. You can have people kind of stop and wait in position and then do things while they're waiting, and then, you know, move while looking at a point, ignore specific enemies, ignore specific areas, prioritize specific enemies, areas, etc. So there's just a huge amount of very, very finite or very, very precise control that you can enact as you're planning. And that caters to my, you know, stare at the screen and think for 10 minutes-ness. The big add, however, with Frozen Synapse 2 is their like macro game mode. So the previous game, it was all missions. You are all in kind of the tactical view and planning out these turns. Now, between tactical missions, you're like managing a city. And there's all these different factions in the city, and they all want to collect relics, and your job is to kind of police them and collect the relics instead of them, while trying not to piss anyone off too much that they declare war on you. And it is incredibly rough around the edges, and nothing in the macro tactical mode is something I would rather that be doing than the micro tactical mode, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So like it is rough to the point that like when you're getting your initial introduction to all the different factions, some of the text for their stories or their intros just cuts off.
Mm.
Like it just does not continue. And that's unfortunate. And then there's rough in terms of gameplay. Like, you know, you can take contracts so that the main missions are incursions. So there's a rogue AI that's like breaking into the world and leaving these relics. And you want to go stop them when they show up. In between them showing up, you can take contracts to earn extra money, which is great. You know, buy new squad members, upgrade your buildings, etc. But to get those contracts, you need to call each faction leader individually. Boom. And again, there's like 8 of them. And there are new contracts basically every time you get out of a mission. So every time you load into the game.
Shitload of like just little tasks.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So
are they
so
fun probably, to talk to? Is there like good dialogue or is it?
It's not good. It's clear it was a labor of love because when you call them up, they will make commentary on things that either you did or they did.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, if you cross them at some other junction, they'll be like, you know, I won't forget the fact that you did X, Y, Z. Or, you know, we just finished an induction ceremony for new initiates. And they'll kind of make little throw-offs to stuff that's happening in the game. It's all so randomized and there's 8 factions. There's, you know, 300 buildings in the game. There's, you know, there's just so much. It's the No Man's Sky problem. None of it really feels meaningful, even though there are all those little shout outs, unfortunately. Yeah. But that is not to detract from the tactical mode, which is as good as it's ever been. And specifically the multiplayer mode. So in terms of new stuff, your units can now continue to move while shooting. Whereas before in the first game, they would always kind of like stop and point when they saw someone. Mm-hmm. Now you have the option. Do they continue along their path while aiming? Do they completely ignore and run along their path? Or do they stop and engage when they see something? The other thing is that there's some new unit types. Nothing too crazy. Mostly area of effect weapons. But the greatest addition comes to the multiplayer, where now there is what's called a one-turn mode. So this is a mode of the game that you can play for a minute, or you can play it for an entire night. And basically it drops you in and gives you a scenario that some other player has set up, and it's all randomized, and you'll have a goal of either, you know, eliminate the other team or be the first to collect these objectives or, you know, kill or protect the civilians, etc. And you plan out one turn, and the turn is, I think, like 15 seconds long versus 5. So it's one long turn and you get one shot at getting this right. And the thing that makes it particularly elegant is that when you score, like wins or losses are not judged just on how you did versus the one person, because a ton of people play, you know, this one turn, and you're scored against everyone that is in that one turn, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So because it's all randomized, you know, you could wind up in a situation where you're just screwed. You spawned out in the open and the enemy got a sniper unit, and it's just there's nothing you can do. You're going to lose some people, which means you're probably not going to do that well overall. But the cool thing is, as long as you do better on average than the other people that played it, you can still come out of that feeling like you won. You know, if you can be in the 90th percentile for points scored, even if you kind of got decimated.
Yeah.
Because it's all relative to your peers. So that takes, you know, 5 minutes if you're really thinking about it to plan out the turn. Probably more like 1 minute if you're just kind of cranking through them. And then you hit play and see how you did. See how you did versus your direct opponent. And then see how you did versus everyone who's played it. And then you just load up a new one and go again. And so, you know, you're not dependent on waiting for anyone to play against. And the player base for this is pretty small. So if you want to do the more direct versus modes, you're going to wait a bit, but that is like the ideal mode for this that I never would have thought to ask for. And they put into the game. So single player editions, meh at best. Multiplayer editions, freaking right on exactly what I want out of this game.
Yeah.
And that's Frozen Synapse too. I don't know if you guys have any questions.
No, that last one sounds like it's pretty much exactly my speed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and no pressure to think, because it's funny. So I've done, then there's just regular versus matches where it's, you know, you and another person. Technically, it's asynchronous because they can plan their turn and then leave. But a surprising number of people that I've played, like, sit there and wait for you to take their turn. So I guess they only have one game going at a time.
Yeah.
Whereas you can start up like six games and just go in and take whatever is ready for your turn. And you've got, it's 2 weeks before a game will count you like out. So you've got plenty of time. But people will sit there and then they'll start chatting you and being like, you're going to take your turn soon. Are you almost done? What's going on? Like,
well, they're trying to get in, like, your head.
Exactly. Well, maybe. I don't know.
It exactly. Then I that pressure. Doubt is also them getting in your head.
Yeah. So that is still there, and that's for kind of the longer engagements. What I find though is that those engagements are often pretty much decided on the first turn.
Hmm.
It's who can do something unexpected on the first turn to get the upper hand or to take out a unit early, and then the rest of it is just mop up. So really, you know, play the one turn mode. That's where it's all happening anyway, and you've got yourself a good time.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's Frozen Synapse 2. I've like I said, they did exactly what I wanted for multiplayer, and I didn't even know I wanted it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And then final game is another turn-based strategy multiplayer game, which who knew that there would be more than one of those out there. I went back to Atlas Reactor.
Oh, dang. Yeah. Okay.
It's essentially Frozen Synapse meets MOBA. Where you're doing the same thing. You know, there's four people on a team. Each is a unique character that has a set of abilities, and you know, all those abilities have a number of turns cooldown. So you're going to be strategic in how you use them. But basically, the way a turn plays out, everyone plans their moves in advance, and then that, you know, that is enacted. And people, there's a prep phase, a dash phase, and they call it the blast phase, but basically an attack phase followed by.
Please, blast phase. Just every phase is blast phase. Live every phase like it's blast phase.
Can we have that in the episode now? Instead of like the grind, we just have blast phase.
Blast phase. What you been blasting?
But so yeah, so there's an element of you know, predicting where people are going to be, where they think you're going to be, and it's the whole kind of getting your opponent's head thing. But at the same time, you're balancing your abilities and the abilities of your teammates as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a really high skill cap. Unfortunately, this game was made by Trion Worlds, the company that was just recently sold to Gamigo, I think is the name of it. So this was in the headlines. They did a pretty bad job in terms of not giving employees heads up and doing layoffs. So the studio is down from, you know, hundreds to 25.
Oh God.
Right now.
That sucks.
Yeah. I am hopeful that Atlas Reactor will continue on. And if I didn't know about the layoffs, you know, that I haven't really had any trouble with queue times or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
but just the uncertainty of, hey, this got sold. And if you read the press announcements, Atlas Reactor, it'll be like, you know, Trion Worlds, makers of games such as, and Atlas Reactor never gets mentioned.
Yeah. Rift and Rift and Rift.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it is a genre of game that I like. I'm having fun with it. I hope it persists because I could see myself getting more and more into it, but I'm kind of holding off on spending any money until I know that it's going to be around. Right now, there's probably, I don't know, call it 40 characters in the game. So nothing like a League of Legends that has hundreds.
No, Jesus.
But probably 40 characters in the game, which is a lot to learn, but you can get unlimited access to all of them for $15. Which in my mind is pretty good. And if there wasn't this kind of shroud of concern over the developer being sold and decimated, then I probably wouldn't think twice about investing that. But as it is, I'm kind of waiting and seeing.
I just, you don't want to throw that in and then have them pull the plug tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if there's anyone out there that has played Atlas Reactor or would be interested in playing it, I'd love to have others to hang out with. And it is very clearly a teamwork oriented game.
Yeah.
But who knows if it'll be around.
Yeah. Are you playing these with randos, or are you finding people that you know to hang out and play with?
So the intent was to play with Phil Holmes, who has the game, and we've intended to play with each other. We just haven't been able to make it line up. So to date, I've been playing with randos. And if there's anyone that I admired the way they performed and they didn't seem like assholes, I'll send over a friend request. So far, there have been 2 friend requests in 20 games. So
yeah,
take that for what you will. But in general, like I said, the queue times have been relatively short, nothing different than what I've seen in League of Legends. And the games are not nearly as long as your traditional MOBA games. It probably plays out in 20 minutes or so. So that's right in the sweet spot for me.
Nice. So that was Atlas Reactor.
Atlas Reactor. Looking for group on that one. So
yeah,
hit me up and we will play. But yeah, so that's... I've been on just that turn-based binge, and it's been great.
Nice.
With a little wipeout thrown in.
Yeah, so very slow, deliberative games, and then...
Yes, that's exactly it. I think, I talked about Wipeout when I played the normal version years and years ago, and the thing I remember saying is Wipeout has a way of making a tenth of a second feel like a very long time.
It's like having your hand on the stove.
Yeah, polar opposite games, enjoying all of them.
Very cool. Neat. So is that everything? I mean, not everything, but everything you're going to talk about today?
Everything I'm going to talk about, yeah. There's been a couple other small things, but those are the ones that have really gotten my time over the past couple of weeks.
Great. Let's see. David, how about you?
Sure. So I haven't been playing a ton. I'm... zeroing in on the end of Shadow of War. It's currently showing me at, I think, 92% completion.
Okay.
So I just completed the second act out of 4. However, the third act is literally one mission long, and the fourth act is kind of just where it throws you into free play mode.
That feels about right. That's video game logic time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and to be fair, like, I have unlocked every skill except one at this point, and I've just spent a lot of time, like, dicking around and either antagonizing orcs I don't like, or, raising, my army of orcs. I mean, other than that, it's just... I don't know. It's still kind of weird the degree to which, your character is clearly careening towards being a villain.
Careening?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, it's...
The way you describe it, he's very clearly doing, like, very hanky things.
Yeah, well, there's also that. But, I mean, even outside of, like, some of the, sort of creepy, like, kind of subcontext stuff, just the fact that the very first thing you do is create a new ring of power, and that the elf that is kind of your possessing you is very overtly of the opinion that the ends justify the means and stuff like that. Like, there's just, it's very obvious that things are not going to end well. And all of the characters in the game very clearly know that things aren't going to end well, but no one seems to really care that much.
It's up to somebody else to actually work to make this better. We'll just keep doing what we're doing. It's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, continues to be fun, just kind of running around. I've done some of the it's got sort of a I don't know what you call it, like an asymmetric multiplayer thing, where basically you can either avenge the deaths of other players and take on the captains that took them out, and likewise you can raid other people's fortresses, and anything you do in another player's game has no impact on them whatsoever. But if either you win in when trying to avenge them, or if they win when you're trying to take over their fort, you'll get some points towards some multiplayer goodies. So it's mostly just a fun excuse to run around and be a crazy magic ninja. Other than that, I think I talked about this a while back. I've been debating jumping on the Zachtronics bandwagon, and so I picked up Exapunks.
Okay, yeah, the newest
one. Which is the most recent game that's kind of a story-driven assembly language programming game. And it's really pretty interesting. I love all of the instructions are kind of taught to you in the form of a series of in-game zines that you can either read on your computer as a PDF or print out. And so it's very much, you have to literally read the fucking manual in order to get anywhere with the game.
That's a major Zachtronics thing. Like the TIS 100 is like you have to read a manual for a computer that doesn't exist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting though, because I actually have programmed assembly language in the past, and you're basically actually programming assembly language. It's a little bit simplified in terms of you have less registers and things like that, but it's basically the same thing you actually do, which is kind of interesting.
In the past I talked about Human Resource Machine. This is the slightly less Fisher Price version of that.
Exactly. Yeah, no, so it's kind of cool. I will say the one thing that I'm sort of bouncing off of it is, I really enjoy programming. I kind of enjoy sort of the puzzle aspects of that. But the thing is, the aspect of programming I tend to enjoy in terms of problem solving is more the algorithmic aspects, coming up with clever ways to approach problems. And it seems like instead this really more trades on you have a very limited command set, and so it more trades less on clever ways to approach problems than it is clever ways to abuse the syntax. So, a lot of emphasis on things like, for example, in most missions, you have to destroy your little robot thing you're guiding around at the end of the mission so that you don't leave any evidence behind. And you can do that by just running the halt command. Or you can also do that, any errors cause the robot to self-destruct. So it's basically in your best interest to design your program such that at the end it will intentionally error out and you can destroy the robot without having to spend a extra halt command. things like that. A lot of abusing modulo to basically make loops with less commands, things like that. So it's interesting. It's just not as compelling of, it's not what I'm exactly looking for in the puzzles. Other than that, the storyline is you have some sort of weird disease that causes your body to spontaneously start converting your cells to microchips, just random microchips.
Okay.
And it's implied that maybe this is was part of an experiment in like human computer interfaces, and your character can't afford the money for the treatment, so but you eventually get contacted by basically an AI to hire you to do these hacks in exchange for the treatment. And overall, I find the way she's written to be kind of entertaining. It's very much the her primary motive is not so much to actually have you be doing anything, so much as is to just kind of analyze your behavior and learn more about human interaction.
Okay.
So, for example, one of the early missions, she's attempts to study humor by having you hack the factory for Peanut Blast brand candy or candy bars in order to make them contain no peanuts. which I guess is kind of comedy. But, yeah. It's just, kind of likably written. It's kind of funny. Sort of a semi, kind of divides the approach between being kind of the GLaDOS, psychopath type thing and just being very, very overeager.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's a fun game. It's cheap. It's worth playing. If you've ever wondered what assembly language is like, it's a good introduction. So yeah. I'm having a good time.
Yeah. The aesthetics of the game are really neat too. The fact that it takes place in 1997 is cool.
That's really interesting. And it is kind of funny because although I complain a little bit about the syntax thing, like that truly is what programming was like back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was scrapping for every little bit of memory that you could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that I need to see when it came out. They kind of do some riffs on the gig economy that hits just a little close to home.
A little bit.
And I don't know if if it was actually came out late enough that it was becoming very apparent how predatory a lot of that was or not.
ExoPunks came out a couple of months ago, so it's
okay,
very
so
much
yeah, so
yeah,
definitely
yeah they're responding to the times, an actual reality right. of the thing. So
responding to the times in 1990.
It would have sucked if they did it back then, too. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well. Cool. So, ExoPunks. Yeah, I'd be curious. I know you talked about just algorithm design being your preferred kind of approach to this. Most of Zachtronics stuff is, low-level programming kind of things. Is mm-hmm. ExoPunks one of the ones that, gives you a histogram at the end that shows you how it grades you on different variables, give you a sense of I optimized for this and sacrificed from that.
Yeah. So it gives you basically three histograms, how many cycles or how many steps it, took to complete your program, how many lines of, code you had, mm-hmm. and then how, what it calls activity, which is basically how many computer networks you moved through. So the last one is mostly relevant in that you're controlling these kind of little robots that are going through the cyberspace. And so that prevents you from either just having one robot and make it run back and forth all over the place. It basically encourages you to use kind of more parallel algorithms.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's just a thing that Studio does. I noticed it most strongly watching people play. Ben, what's the one where you're moving the elements around and doing alchemy?
Opus Magnum.
Opus Magnum. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one I've actually been debating checking out next, because it seems like it maybe provides a little more freedom for you know, kind of creativity.
Yeah.
As much as the Zaxxtronics game can, yes.
Yeah.
Check out InfiniFactory as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else, David?
No, that's it. I imagine I'll, you know, have something next time with, all of the Halloween sales happening, but nothing yet.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. One of those started today, and, man, I'm waiting for, November's budget to open up. Yeah.
You got to pick up, Call of Cthulhu?
Yes, I'm going to, although right now I'm a little bit worried that I haven't seen reviews of it yet. Usually, if nobody has a review of it beforehand, they're trying to hide it for some reason. So I'm curious to see if that's actually going to be a stinker or not. Doesn't matter. I'd still like to play it, but, will it be a genuine for fun game, or will it be a Cole playing a horror game as a curiosity thing?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if it's not at least a little janky, can it really call itself, true to the Lovecraftian, you know, genre,
or even just the history of Lovecraft games. I mean,
yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I got two doozies of ones. So I'll start off with the older one. I picked up Mario Party for the Switch.
Okay.
I first played this when I was in Cincinnati for a wedding with some friends, and it was fun. And then I took it with me when I went to visit some friends over the weekend, this weekend, and just showed it off there. One, you can play it one player, which is great if you're on an airplane. So that made a 4.5 hour flight seem much shorter, and that was great. But then also it's a pretty good game if you got a group of people who are into like party games. I was kind of thinking about I was thinking about this game when we were talking about the PlayStation story, where this is a very like elegantly designed game. Like all the mini games that they have, well, by and large, most of them only involve a joystick and a button press.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, when you play this game, everybody has a single Joy-Con controller. So the Switch comes with two. So that gives you two players to play.
Mm-hmm.
And it plays up to four people. So you might need to get another Joy-Con set or something if you want more people to play. But it's all one thing that's really nice about it is when you go to play a mini game, there's kind of a staging screen. Where, and this is similar to previous games, but one difference is instead of just showing a video of how the game works with the controls, it gives you the actual game.
Oh.
And you can just play the game to get ready for what the input is.
Why the hell do you need a loading screen then?
They don't show any of the presentation or anything like that, but it's literally just so that people can figure out the controls for themselves and they can ready up whenever they're ready or feel comfortable with going.
Yeah.
So if everybody knows the game, they can just ready up right away. But otherwise, it just goes through a couple different cycles where they can check out the game and play it while they're waiting to make sure they're good on the controls.
I like that. Way nobody is caught off guard.
Yeah, I thought it was super nice. It makes it for a really good experience where, yeah, exactly, no one's caught off guard. There's a surprising amount of content for the game. So there's a typical board game that all the Mario Party games have, where you run around a game board. You can land on blue or red spaces to gain or lose coins. You can land on green spaces that do something random, and then it'll randomly be blue or red, and then that determines the teams for a minigame at the end of the round. They have that. That's all well and good. They also have four other modes of gameplay besides that you can get into.
Like four other meta games in which the mini games are stuck.
Correct. Yeah. So the one closest to the board game, they have this thing called where it's a 2-on-2 type Mario Party experience. Instead of it being a defined paths that you walk around on the game board, it's kind of freeform. It's like a grid system where there's a bunch of different squares.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just choose where you want to walk on this. So a star will be randomly placed on the board so you can walk towards it. You can walk to jump on other characters to make them lose coins. there's like random event spots that you can go to there, and they kind of have a system where there's like kind of Easter eggs, there's like puzzles, so there might be like a random key on one side of a board and it might open a door like on another side of the board. So there's kind of like a lot of different things you can go for. So I played that most recently, and that's pretty good. So all of those games are basically 2v2 players. So one effect that that has is in the regular board game mode, a lot of times the random green, a lot of times it goes into a situation where you're either playing like everyone against one another or a 1-on-3 game. There's not as many 2-on-2 games in that one since they developed so many for the other game. On top of that, there's a co-op game where you're like going down a river and you play these like 4-player co-op games.
Hmm.
So it's kind of like a different flavor where you're all trying to like succeed, you know? So that's
Are
fun.
They variants of the base games or are they completely their own thing?
They're completely their own thing. There might be some crossover that I can't think of off the top of my head. But by and large, the games you play there are basically ones where you're trying to coordinate with one another. It's like, all right, you do this and I'll do this and this, that type of thing. So that's great. And then on top of that, there's a Toad's recreational area where you can just play these. You can play a baseball game, like you can play these random sports games, you know, that maybe don't fit into any of the other ones because they're kind of their own game variants. There's just like a shit ton of content in there. And then on top of that, there's unlockables. So like if you complete all of these sections, you get like these gems and that unlocks like a bigger part of the game that I haven't gotten to yet. So I've been surprised by that. And it's a lot of fun. Like they do a good job when you're playing like an individual game to not repeat mini games. So you usually will, if you play a single board game, you won't play the same game twice. So I like that aspect of it a lot. And then I think maybe one of the last sections that I didn't mention, there's one where it's more like motion controlled stuff with like swinging around the joystick. So they have stuff that's like similar to like DDR or like Guitar Hero or whatever, where you're trying to like move the joystick during like timed intervals. There's a whole bunch of stuff there. It's pretty fun. Definitely a good party game. If we ever do a holiday meetup, the four of us, then I will probably try and bring that and force that upon you guys.
That sounds fun.
Sweet. Yeah. What are you doing for controllers on these? Is it just Wiimotes or what?
I went and got another two Joy-Con, or well, a single
Joy-Cons, that's right.
Controller, whatever. Yeah. So I have four of those all together. So it supports up to four players.
Nice.
I do have one janky Joy-Con, so it's not the greatest experience for all four players, but it's good enough.
Yeah,
so.
Just give it to somebody you don't like.
Yeah. That's why I always play with it myself.
Oh, jeez.
No, I'm just kidding. do you guys have any questions about Mario Party Switch?
I have two that can probably be answered really briefly. First off, does it do anything special with the Switch hardware with particular games?
I would say there's stuff with like the vibrations that you can only do with the high definition vibration. Blah,
ooh,
blah, blah.
Yes.
Yeah, I know, right? A cool example of this is there's one mini game, and this is I think in the regular game where the way it works is it's like a sound, it's like a listening test, but for feeling the vibration. So it'll show like, for example, it'll show an aquarium and it has three different animals go through and swim through and it'll do the vibration and then it'll close the curtain and secretly do one of the three ones and you have to pick which one it is.
Okay.
So for example, like the squid will jump in and then jump out. One of those like fish will jump in and jump out, and then a larger fish, I forget what that one's called, will jump in and jump out. And each one has like a slightly different vibration. Two of them are like pretty similar and one of them you can kind of tell the difference of. And then it'll do a random one of those behind the screen and you have to guess which one it is.
Nice.
So that's a good example of the hardware. It doesn't do anything with the IR sensor since that's only on one of the two Joy-Cons that you get.
Right.
So it would make, you'd have to have like four sets of Joy-Cons instead of two sets to play four players. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a good call on their part. Outside of vibration, it's vibration, motion control, and then the two buttons are the main things. So
cool.
Yeah.
Secondly, do they make any concessions to make games move faster or be more engaging in single player? My problem with earlier Mario Party games, when I ended up playing them single player because I was a lonely child who rented those games, was that you would end up spending most of your time waiting for other people to other AIs to roll their dice and then go through their little board game motions. It was just a lot of sitting and waiting. Do they ameliorate that?
Somewhat. You still watch some of that stuff. Like you watch someone hit a die, but it goes kind of quickly. I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't, they don't fast forward stuff, you know, which I'm fine with them not fast forwarding it, but what not fine is they don't give you the option to fast forward it. Like if you're like, I don't care at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's one of those things where it's like, they probably assume that you want to see at least where they land or what they're doing on their turn. Cause that might impact you, but yeah. There is, like, for example, on the freeform one where you can kind of, it's like a grid and you can kind of go around on a bunch of different squares. One thing that they have in this game, I didn't mention this, you can get companions as you play through. So they kind of integrate it differently based on the game type or whatever, but you can get like an ally, and it'll just be another random character of the ones that you can choose from. And on your turn, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, when you instead of rolling just a d6, you have your choice of rolling your character's special die, which is different for each character, and it tries to thematically fit with the character. So, for example, Bowser's die, two of the spaces are you lose 3 coins. One of the spaces, you just get a roll of 1. But then the other 3 spaces are an 8, 9, and 10. So, like, oh, very shit. Strong. Yeah, so it's, like, very volatile, you know? So it kind of matches with, like, Bowser's design. Whereas, like, let me think of another example. Dry Bones, the skeleton or whatever. He has 3 ones and 3 sixes. Like, he's either alive or dead. And so it's 50% chance of which one you get. So they do a good job of trying to make A, the die interesting, but then B, have it match up thematically with the character, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
So when you get an ally, you get their die as well. So your character has the option of rolling their die if you want. And then the ally that you get just rolls a die that's 50% 1, 50% 2. And that'll be added to your roll. So it, on average, you start going a little bit faster if you have an ally. So they have this system integrated. So going back to your question, do they speed things up? When you're playing one player, if you get an ally, it shows this like short little video of you like talking to them and then going into your party or whatever. They just cut that right out when it's the computer's turn. They just like walk by and pick up an ally, and that's good. All they show. Yeah. So there's like a few cases where they tried to like cut the time down a little bit, but there's not a way for you to skip through everything, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right. I love this game. I would love to talk about it more, but I also want to get to the second game I've been playing. So.
Okay.
All right, I will move on, and I'll say that I installed and started playing Red Dead Redemption 2 today.
Ah, dang.
Yeah. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, I got a copy coming to me.
Took a scant 2.5 hours to install. I only had to delete 4 other games.
Sweet God.
For Red Dead Redemption. Oh. Yeah, it's not as bad as, like, I know there's, like, memes on this on the internet talking about, like, how you have to clear out, like, everything on your PlayStation in order to play Red Dead Redemption. It's, like, 80 gigs. Which I guess depending upon the model that you have at the PS4, that could be like all of your PS4. And mine, I don't know how much memory I have total, but like 80 gigs isn't a terrible amount. Like for example, The Witness is only 7 gigs. South Park is 25 gigs or so. So it's like, even though 80 is a lot, it's not like, it's like about 3 times more than like the biggest game
position. I have the terabyte PS4 and I forgetting now if that is 100 gigs or 1,000 gigs.
1,000 gigs.
Okay, so I'm good.
Yeah. You should be quite fine, yeah. But yeah, still a long install time. It comes with a data disk and then a play disk. So you insert data disk where it's just install and stuff for like an hour and a half. After that's done, you put in the play disk. And still install stuff for like another hour, and then you can play the game.
And weirdly, while it's installing, it shows old Solid Snake smoking and puts up weird little images.
Yeah, it's real bizarre. So that's, you know, the evolution of Rockstar is seeing what it takes to install a game and play it. The game itself is pretty fun. I actually had played this over the weekend too, because the person I was visiting decided to get it day of when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So the big thing about it is the game kind of starts off in a pretty contained area. And so it's not like open world from the get go. So I have not gotten to that part yet. So there's not really much I can talk about in terms of like the meat and potatoes of the game.
Yeah.
I've only done some of the missions so far. I don't know if I want to give away where you're at. You're in a location that's just very pretty, I guess. I'll say that much.
Okay.
The dialogue's good. The setting's good. Like, it feels very much out of like something like The Hateful Eight in terms of like how old fashioned things are and kind of like how like sparse the environment can be, I guess. Yeah, I guess I don't have too much to say about it. I'm still like learning the mechanics of it, but it seems cool so far, I guess, is the best I can say.
Yeah.
It's a very daunting controller scheme because you interact with like a lot of different things. And basically the way it seems is you walk up something you can interact with, and a seemingly random button will flash on the screen for what you need to press to interact with. And that's something that I haven't really gotten down yet, and maybe it'll make more sense after I played it for a long time. But like, for example, here's one example is at one point I dropped my gun and my hat had gotten knocked off in the middle of a mission. And so it says to pick both those things up. There's a different button to pick each of those things up, though. It's like
L1
to pick up a gun and then like either square to pick up the hat. And it's like, it's just random, like every time. Like to open like a container, you press the square button to open it up, and then you press triangle to close it, which again is like kind of maybe not as intuitive. Yeah, like I don't know. So like that is a little annoying right now, I guess. But again, maybe it'll make sense later. But
I mean, I think you showed the use case where it does make sense, which is picking up your hat and your gun at the same time, because no self-respecting cowboy would do those things separately.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Do you guys have any questions about the game or anything?
No, I want to go in relatively unspoiled on stuff. I've been kind of on blackout. So I at least want to get those first impressions on there. This is less of a question. Go ahead.
No, please.
No, I was going to say this is less of a question and more of just a general comment. It sucks spending money on things for your system that are not games. One of the best things you can do to improve your experience with your PS4, if you're not going to get Red Dead Redemption 2, is I put in the show notes a link to an external USB 3.0 hard drive. It's 2 terabytes. It's $65. If you have the ability to get one of those, it makes using a PS4, no matter what the size, much, much less painful, because making room in the fridge sucks.
Yeah.
So my question was, one of the seemingly coolest things that they talked about for the game is that, you know, they recorded so much custom dialogue that it would really feel like people in the world were reacting or saying things that were personal to you. And I'm curious if you've stumbled across anything that felt that way yet.
Not yet. But again, I would just cite that I'm in a pretty like constrained part of the game right now. So I haven't really seen the world, like the main world. So
yeah.
Not yet, but I imagine. And again, like I've only played this for like maybe like 3 or 4 hours, so I haven't really put a whole lot of time into it. So I think I'll probably have better answers for that in like the coming weeks.
All right. Nice. The first time someone comments that you're wearing your black shirt instead of your red shirt, I want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And if people like freak out because you switch from your red pants to your brown pants. Yeah.
Actually, I thought I would have more to say about it, but I don't yet. It's a really pretty game. You're the main character. I mean, there's not much story about him yet. So like, he just seems like a gruff Westerner kind of guy. And so whatever.
I'm down.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like a Skyrim progression system. There's not a huge progression system from what it looks like, but there's like it seems like there's a small one with that, where it's like if you pet a horse, you kind of level up in horse husbandry, and if you shoot people, then you get better at shooting or something like that. It looks like that's like what the upgrade system is like in the game, for better or for worse. But
yeah,
so is it kind of more of a like GTA San Andreas type of a thing, sort of?
I think it seems like it's very limited, but again, I haven't gotten to the main world yet, so maybe it opens up a whole bunch, but yeah, this is a lot of just like, oh, probably next week I'll have more to talk about with this.
Do you know And again, maybe this is a, you just haven't gotten to it yet. Do you know, does it have hunting? Because I remember that being a lot of fun in the previous game.
I do know that it does have hunting, yeah.
Sweet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, yeah. I'll, more to come next week.
Yeah, I'll look forward to
it. We can have a redemption off goal.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is when I would normally go. However, because of Portland and also because of laying in bed with my head on a heating pad and screaming at my head to stop hurting and coughing in the middle of those screams, I haven't really played that much that wasn't just a bunch of mobile stuff that I've talked about before. So this is, I swear I'm going to fix this later on. Hey, Dennis, I played Hellblade. We did it for WAF.
Yay!
Yeah,
good.
It's real neat.
I assume not the VR version.
No, not the VR version. just the wearing headphones and be like generally feeling like, oh, I thought people oversold this to me, but they actually didn't. Was my primary thought. Yeah, Hellblade is cool.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So there are definitely worse games that you could be playing on a Halloween holiday. So.
I still can't believe, and I'm forgetting her name now, but the lead in that game was literally like an office manager that they were like, hey, you can be a stand-in until we find someone. And then just surprise, amazing acting talent that
wait, really?
That thing.
Senua was just somebody from around the office?
Like literally she was the secretary.
Holy shit.
I think she won she was definitely a finalist for one of the video game awards, like best actress.
Oh, she did so good. Oh my God. I'm surprised I didn't pull that up. Yeah.
Yeah. So just a feel good story in a game that is really not a feel good story.
By the end,
there's a sense of, catharsis. I don't know if I'd say redemption, but yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. It's good. I'm so happy you enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything else on Steam, it's on sale for 40% off.
Oh, dang. Yeah. No, that is absolutely worth the squeeze. Cool. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit.
I'm sorry. It's a reflexive response at this point.
Oh yeah. Well, it just has to happen is the thing. So
snap.
we can't not buttons.
Yeah. So that's the one cough. I'm on marker number 60. Usually there are somewhere between 50 Jeez. And 20. but this has been level number
it's
two.
It's been a coffee week.
Yeah. Oof. This has been level number 262. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much if you came out to the Portland Retro Games Expo. As far as other big network things, going to have details about, Duckstream as soon as we plan it. We're taking a little bit of a break here. It'll be sometime in December, though, so watch for that. And obviously we will talk it up here when it happens, the streaming marathon that we do to benefit Transactive. Otherwise though, ratings and reviews, Patreon, and telling your friends. Is there anything that I'm forgetting?
Just out of curiosity, how many characters did you unlock in the GameCube version of Smash Brothers over the weekend?
So we changed the challenge because Gary thought that he had Super Smash Brothers Melee. However, he only had Brawl.
Okay.
So we changed the topic for the talk in general. It was not about Smash Brothers. It was about playing games wrong, using the fact that we like playing Smash Brothers, but really enjoyed playing it single player, playing it by ourselves. Okay. So just in general, it was like this. It was actually really cool, and the episode's coming out sooner than we thought it would. It was just a kind of an editorial talk about what it means to play games wrong, looking at different ways that is done. And talking about some of our favorite examples from our own experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Buy the game or change the entire topic of the speech.
Yeah.
Change the entire topic.
it ended up being more fun. Doing it that way. Cool. Yeah. So we did not unlock an awful lot. We just set up Brawl, and we gave little special stickers away if people beat a stage in the Subspace Emissary. Yeah. Cool. Well, I have been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I've been David Meismith on The Level on DuckFeed.
I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelBee on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay. If I cough in this last section, then it's anything goes, guys.
Oh my goodness. Let your hair down.
Prepare for the Oz.
Yeah. for people who don't get that, I had to give a big speech at the beginning of the before we recorded, saying like, "Hey, if I cough while you're recording, don't react to it. Like, you know, don't stop. Just I'll edit it out. It'll be fine." And as I was saying that, and I was coughing, Ben, as thoughtful as he is, like, I coughed and went, "Aw," I said, "Don't do that." Cause he was just empathetic, and as you know, it sounds painful when I cough. Oh, so
felt very much like Nazi training. Don't emote. Don't show compassion.
Yes. No. Fear is the mind killer. So I only have one. Live every phase like it's blast phase.
Yes.
So I feel like I'm going to endorse that one. However, for sake of completeness, I had, if you die in real life, you die in the game. And what you've been blasting.
What you've been blasting.
But I definitely throw behind the live every phase like it's blast phase.
I wanted to write down, if you die in real life, you die in the game, but I forgot to, so I'm happy you captured that. Nice. Dennis?
So live every phase like it's blast phase is one of mine. And then the other is vaporization by quantization.
Mm.
Even though quantization is totally not a word, but
vaporization by quantization.
Quantization. Wait. It just doesn't have the same number of syllables, though. It doesn't have that ring.
Vaporization by quantization.
Quantization. Yeah, you just repeat a couple letters.
Yeah, okay.
Hmm. Quantity, quantitize, quantization.
Hmm. Qantas, the airline.
sorry, right. I was about to tangent. Go on.
Ben, how about you?
I also have just blast phase with two exclamation points.
Okay.
And I also have, we are a bunch of dipshits.
Oh man, I like that.
You said afterwards, and that's okay, but I chose not to include that.
Yes. Yeah. man, I would like to put that in. However, profanity gets treated weird on iTunes.
Plus, we got the quad blast phase recommendation.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be live every phase like it's blast phase, right?
Oh, yep.
Okay.
Wholeheartedly endorse.
Yeah.
Cool. So, random question. Has someone's played Slime Rancher, correct?
Yeah.
Is that good stuff?
Yeah, it's neat.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Apparently somehow on the Halloween sale, which I don't understand.
No, it's not scary at all. It's just a cute little management sim.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I like it. It gets a recommendation. It's probably available for like $6.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. That, absolutely worth it.
Sweet.
Cool. So I'm gonna go and drink some broth and then lay down and hope I wake up able. Oh. Able to hear. Able to hear on my left ear.
Chicken yeah. Soup and ALAs.
See, LA has caffeine in it. Yeah, but,
I mean, ginger ale in general, you know, solves all illnesses.
I think that. So, I drink ginger ale on the regular anyway. So I think that I have worn down its medicinal effects. Although I do appreciate and understand the sentiment that you're providing.
Definitely. Yeah.